African law protect whistleblowers? That is to say, if you had information about grand corruption or malfeasance and you sat inside of the state and you wanted to come forward with this information but you feared for your life for whatever reason, would the law protect you, and what protections are due to you, and are those sufficiently implemented? Joining us now is Sintibale Makara, who's a director in the dispute resolution practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr, to talk to us about the proposed reforms around whistleblowing legislature. Sintibale, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
To what extent does the current legislative framework protect those who want to come forward as whistleblowers?
Maybe let's start on the basis that there's more than there's about 15 laws in South Africa that actually protect whistleblowers in various forms. The challenge that we have, for example, with the main one being the Protected Disclosure Act, is that it deals with an employer-employee relationship and in relation to employer-employee relations as well. So that does provide a limitation in the sense of third parties and any other person outside of that employer-employee relationship.
Okay, and so what are the manifestations thereof? That is to say, if I came forward with information, I fear that I might be retaliated against by my employer or in the employment environment, that I'm protected against retaliation of any sort?
Well, the technical answer is yes, you should be, because most employers have now identified the problem of anonymity and confidentiality. The problem with the current legislation, it doesn't especially provide for there to be a compulsory mechanism for protections of your confidentiality and anonymity. In fact, it even doesn't protect you from the person you're disclosing to, which is a challenge in itself, because even the person you're disclosing to them you don't have the protections if that person was to break that confidentiality in the current regime.
Yeah. One would imagine that it leaves a lot of whistleblowers or potential whistleblowers very vulnerable if they wanted to step forward. In what ways have we seen attempts by law enforcement agencies, the NPA, the Hawks, or whatever the case may be, or even just the state more broadly, try to protect those who step forward with vital information?
Look, there's been strides with regards to law enforcement trying to protect whistleblowers. Ultimately, the problem is that, well, not necessarily a problem. In South Africa, we have the regime that says you must face your accuser, which is an understanding that we have with regards to the fact that whoever is accusing Sintibale Makara, I must know who my accuser is. Now, in the backdrop of that, the Constitution has realized the fact that there is confidentiality and protection that needs to be afforded to person making those disclosures. The problem being, though, is that where, for example, there is a challenge to that disclosure, there's no protection to the person that has made initially the disclosure. Like we've seen in many of the case law, that it has not been looking good for whistleblowers, where they face retaliation in the sense of extensive legal costs defending defamation cases, defending cases, for example, of criminal injuria. But also, more importantly, once your name is in the public, we've also seen whistleblowers that have, for example, been assassinated. We have seen whistleblowers being persecuted. Also, further enough to that, the current legislations don't deal with the fact that a whistleblower is not alone. There's a family behind the person. There's loved ones behind the person. Sometimes these disclosures do expose those loved ones, and there's no protection for those people as well.
Yeah, and oftentimes these people sit outside of jobs for a very long time, and are unable to make it back in. The Zondo Commission thought long, hard, and deeply about the protection of whistleblowers because it recognized that they played a very fundamental role in uncovering the rot within the state, and it made a list of recommendations. Which of those have been taken seriously and are being considered as part of the reform?
Well, one of the first key things that has been quite apparent from the Zondo Commission was that we need to expand the definition of whistleblowers to include outside parties like volunteers, contractors, and walk-ins, for example. Secondly, we have not necessarily criminalized threats against whistleblowers, and we need to then introduce state-supported protections to enhance their safety. Like as I've said, the whistleblower and also its loved ones and other affected third parties. Now, what is also important in this is another concept that we probably have heard about maybe in more prominent in international law and international jurisdictions, like in the U.S., for example, where there's issues with regards to making sure that whistleblowers are protected with funds to be able to deal with legal costs and living expenses. In fact, even in the employer-employee relationship, the normal course of it is that the employee usually gets exposed, might be suspended, or might be facing a long litigious process in which they can't fund, and at that time, more likely than not, you'd find they're out of a job while trying to defend their rights in that regard.
Yeah. Expanding the definition of whistleblowers becomes very interesting because it means anybody with information who claims to have information can step forward. Does the state have a responsibility to evaluate the impact, the weight, or the sensitivity of that information before considering granting this person whistleblower status and affording them all the necessary protections?
Again, in the current regime, it's a bit limited because maybe you look at Section 159 of the Companies Act, which has even more protection. But the problem even there, it's allocated to a certain category, being, for example, company secretary, being directors of the company, shareholders, etc. Now, in the Freedom of Disclosure Act, it's still the employer-employee regime that is actually protected. What the expansion would allow is that you then can go to the, you then incentivize people from the public also assisting in the law enforcement and law protection mechanism that we currently have. So it's more of a situation where we're recommending that there should be an enhancement to the protection that currently exists. And in the issue of false reporting, I think as a going concern in any event in all investigations, you need to verify tip-offs, and also be able, as we always say, you have a right to remain, you need to protect yourself and also not to disclose anything that's incriminating to you. So it, as part of the investigation process, there's already those bolting mechanisms. It's a matter of enhancing them and also bringing them to life in the existing legislation and where necessary maybe develop a secondary legislation that will deal maybe even with a regulatory body dealing with whistleblowers in order to make sure that there's proper verification and anonymity is protected.
Yeah. And so a part of this means that new laws have to be then implemented. And you had, when we started this conversation, you said, oh, there are at least 15 pieces of legislature that speak to the protection of whistleblowers. Is there a need in the lawmaking process to harmonize them into a single legislative framework?
There's definitely a need because we need the right hand to know what the left hand is doing. The reality is that because we don't have a coordinated way to fight to combat crime, we do attempt it, but it's not effective at this point in time. Maybe the time then has come for maybe a central hub to be able to absorb all tip-offs, anonymous tip-offs, filter them and then be able to allocate them and report them to the relevant authorities depending on where they fall into. For example, some of the organizations that you would think of is Public Protector, South African Human Rights Commission, Financial Intelligence Center, SAPS, and the Hawks, for example, are just some of the institutions that should be coordinated. There are attempts to coordinate, but it's not as fluid as it should be, and that's where the leaks happen and the whistleblowers get exposed. And that identifying the fact that there's that problem with confidentiality and anonymity, because there's no recourse when there's been a breach.
Yeah. Let's talk about, for instance, a different sort of protection that the state often extends to people. In the instance of witness protection, when the state identifies a key witness who might be at risk, but this witness is important for the case and for them to prove their case, they often put this person under what they call witness protection. Does witness protection look like what whistleblower protection should be looking like?
Not necessarily, and that's the issue currently. Where's the funding coming from for witness protection? And to what veracity and for what long period is that witness protection? Most witness protection is limited to the time in which the investigation happens, the prosecution happens up until a conviction, or even, for example, where a person is then determined to be innocent. But the fact that you've made a disclosure still exposes you to retaliation, even during the course of it, but also post for the prosecution. And that's where, for example, that specific legislation is also lacking. In fact, the Protective Disclosure Act does also, to a certain degree, try and address some of that specific issue with disclosure. The problem is that trying to mechanize and be able to regulate and be able to consequence manage the leaks in regards to the disclosures of people's identities, because right now there's not necessarily a prohibitive mechanism to actually deter people from actually revealing whistleblowers. In fact, the fact that you actually need to reveal yourself in certain circumstances as to who you are and your identity in order for the system to work has been found to also be problematic in providing not providing the adequate protection.
Yeah. This comes at a cost, sometimes quite a heavy cost, one where the NPA is already fiscally constrained. It thinks whistleblower protection is going to cost us significantly more. How do we budget and plan for this?
Look, it's going to take a coordinated effort from stakeholders. And when I say stakeholders, I always start with us as the people, to understand that what the need is and what the harm is that we're trying to remove from society. Crime enforcement and law enforcement doesn't require these mechanisms, and funds must be made available, and unfortunately. So we do look forward to seeing what form the new legislation is going to take, or any amendment is going to take. And I assume it's going to include a discussion with Parliament and the lawmakers to maybe make available those funds.
Yeah. What are other countries doing that we can learn from? And perhaps what are some of the really good case studies out there?
Well, one of the things that Monica, without specifying a specific country, for example, in the U.S., one of the things that has been recognized is the fact that the third party, the whistleblower, doesn't only become the whistleblower alone. When you do make a disclosure, not only you are exposed, but your family might be exposed as well. And that's where, for example, money becomes a very important mechanism. But also creating a structure, for example, a regulatory body dealing with whistleblowers would be able to center some of the issues relating to the whistleblower, and also having one hub in which disclosures can be made, such as, for example, how you would see with anonymous tip-offs, how they're being filtered. In our current situation, from a protected disclosure actual situation, it has to do with the employer-employee relationship. In the other legislations, again, it's limited to those categories in those legislations, in those ones. For example, with the Witness Protection Act, you have to be someone that's identified as being a witness. But now, in the capacity of you being a witness, to what extent does that actually prevail? Now, with international law and what we can adopt from our neighbors in other countries, is the recognition that when you talk about a witness, what they disclose, sometimes it can also have to be in camera so that you can make sure that you limit any retaliation or any identity where you actually see the apprehension that there could be potential harm to the witness.
Give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. 086-000-2032. 086-000-2032. Your WhatsApp voice notes on 0614-104-107. 0614-104-107. And tweet me. It is @Oliver_speaking on Twitter and Oliver Dixon on Facebook. We've seen a number of really gruesome, gratuitous instances of whistleblowers being targeted and leading to the loss of their lives. One such person, of course, being Babita Diekoran, who was still in the employ of the department, Gauteng Department of Health, at the time of her assassination, and when she was taking on what was clearly a corruption mafia within the department, or at least that had infiltrated the department. Many cried wolf afterwards, saying that a lot should have been done to protect her, and you know, there's failure after the fact. I'm curious and I'm wondering, what liability does the state carry for the failure of the protection of whistleblowers? If, for instance, I was a parent to children, I became a whistleblower, and if I became targeted and assassinated, and the state failed to protect me when it had clearly a statutory obligation to do so, can my family legally and with great prospects of success sue the state?
Well, suing the state is one thing. The question is that, does the state have the obligation extending from you with regards to your dependents? Now, that could be a question that needs to maybe looked at from other laws that are available to you with regards to claims for dependents and the like. But where, for example, it becomes a bit tricky, and precisely the reason why maybe an amendment is due, is because of that fact that right now it's a whole web and a whole tale in regards to actually finding out what your rights are with regards to any disclosure that is now being breached and everything else. That's where the recognition is that there needs to be the legal cost that we're looking at. living expenses need to be identified, but also the financial burden is to those left behind need to be looked at. That's where, for example, the legislation comes in, because the current recourse requires you, and we know in South Africa, prosecuting your rights in court is not cheap. So the reality of the matter is that as much as, yes, they can, there's a right that they need to protect or a right they need to enforce. The arms of justice in South Africa are not as quick as one would like at times, and those are things that the system is working on. But more importantly is that many a times people don't have the litigation costs to be able to pursue their rights. So many a times, many of the successful cases you'd find, and many of the cases, even when they're unsuccessful, that you'd find some NGO or other third party is the one funding that litigation, where the families don't necessarily have recourse in regards to it. And also looking at the fact that does the state actually have a liability at this point in time? Many times you'll find no, because you'll find, like the example you use, the disclosure has been made to an employer by an employee. So your first recourse would be now to be able to source whether the breach with regards to the confidentiality was made at the internal processes of the employer-employee relationship. Now, it might be the liability to the employer, but even there, again, it invites litigation, which, again, I said, is something not cheap in South Africa.
Yeah. Can I, if for instance, I come forward with information and I get the promise of the state, maybe the police or the NPA or the Hawks or whatever the case may be, that they will protect me, and then they fail to do so, can I bring an order against them, or can I seek an order against them to then compel the courts to get the courts to compel them to give me the protections that are due to me as a whistleblower? That is to say, to make sure that I have security, to make sure that my family is taken care of, or whatever the case may be, whatever financial implications it might have. Can I bring an order against the state after the fact of my disclosures?
Certainly, in theory, with the interpretation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and what the protections are there, that can be brought. With the current legislation, you don't have an outright answer to that specific question, which is the problem. That can you actually bring a charge to the state where they fail to make the disclosure, because there's no mandatory obligation on you to remain anonymous with the state. As you know, in many criminal cases, for example, you would see with witnesses that the docket does contain their names many of the times. Unless further applications are made to conceal those names, it's very difficult in South Africa, for example, to justify an in-camera testimony, for example, which is also something then that needs to also be looked at. So many of these reforms would have to go across board with the Witness Protection Act, Protected Disclosure, and many other legislations that come into mind when we're facing such issues.
Yeah. And just lastly, where are we in the process of thinking through some of these reforms? Are we at an advanced stage, or are we still far behind in the process?
In the discussions that I've been having, it seems to be something that the regulator is taking into account, and that the lawmakers are taking into account. As you would remember, that the president also raised it in the State of the Nation address, raising the issue of protecting whistleblowers. So I do think we should be seeing a white paper soon, because one of the things that was released after the Zondo Commission was actually, for example, the whistleblower protection regime that was actually proposing certain reforms as well.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for your time and your insights this evening. It really has been incredibly helpful.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. Thank you for having me.
That's Sintibale Makara, who's the director in the dispute and resolution practice at Cliff Decker Hofmeyr. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whistleblower protection. Have you perhaps been in a situation where you've had information about corruption in the workplace, impropriety in the workplace, and you perhaps wanted to come forward, but you were too scared that you were going to face retaliation and retribution by those that would be targeted by your information, and that the state would do nothing for you, and so you decided to just keep quiet and just go on with your life? Or do you know of somebody that's been in that position, in that situation? I really genuinely would love to hear from you. Share some of those experiences for us. I think it might crystallize for a lot of people why whistleblower protection laws are so important and why it's necessary for us to get them to be fit for purpose. given that, given the environment we find ourselves in of rampant and runaway endemic corruption in South Africa? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 086.